What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your 100 on my wrist, 80 on my wrist of music, news, and criticism.
Are you ready for it?
I'm John Caramonica, pop music critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a pop music reporter at the New York Times.
I see how this is gonna go. Joe, politics season is nigh.
Nigh. I mean, it's over us. It's in front and behind us.
We are suffused with it. We are infused with it. It's been a particularly active run of the last few months of musicians choosing to get involved with political campaigns, choosing to distance themselves from political campaigns, perhaps being encouraged to be involved with political campaigns. I don't know, outside of the kind of like boomerism in the 90s of people like riding the Clinton wave or whatever, I don't really feel like I've ever remembered an election cycle where there's been so much intersection with popular music and the center of popular music sphere, and frankly, both candidates.
Yeah.
Often you have musicians aligning themselves typically on the Democratic side, but you have a very unusual realignment that's happening right now and working both sides.
I think one of the rare things that's happening in this election, post Joe Biden dropping out and Kamala Harris taking the Democratic nomination, is that both candidates are pop culture candidates, whereas usually it's one or the other. Like, I feel like...
Or neither.
Usually neither, obviously, but in the last few cycles, it's one or the other. You think of Obama in 08, there was a lot of pop culture and specifically music energy behind that campaign because it was a change campaign, because it was a black candidate, because it was a young candidate. Then this time rolls around slowly as we get into spring and summer 2024 ahead of the election. And Trump was the candidate, both for pop culture in terms of memes and jokes and talking about him on late night and radio shows. And then also, he was the one that musicians were lining up behind first. So like the first endorsements, big music endorsements of this campaign cycle were drill rappers from New York. You know, you had Chef G and Sleepy Hollow appearing with Donald Trump in the Bronx back in August. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And this was when Biden was still in the race. And I was like, this is extremely strange to see active, current, hip, underground, subversive talent lining up not only behind a political candidate, but behind a Republican. And then the Kamala thing happens and everything gets flipped on its head.
Sure. And also, I mean, to your point about Democrat versus Republican, I mean, Trump, obviously an unconventional Republican and also someone with a long and a little bit chaotic history with the hip hop community. I remember as far back as maybe the late 90s, Vibe magazine did a big profile of Trump.
And shout out Nancy Joe Sales.
Shout out Nancy Joe Sales, a legend, talking about how Trump hip hop stars were trying to ingratiate themselves with him and he was trying to ingratiate himself with them. He has always, I think, seen a little bit of himself in the kind of largesse of hip hop. And I think hip hop sees a little bit of itself in the largesse of Trump, a legend. Everybody's largesse, I should say, is a legend.
And it became a sort of shorthand, like all the way up through Mac Miller having a hit calling himself Donald Trump pre-presidential campaigns.
And you've had an unusual alignment happening. And to your point, it's not actually the alignment that you would normally expect. Because what you're seeing with Kamala, obviously, the big thing that's happened in the last week is Taylor Swift's endorsement of Kamala Harris. Not a surprise necessarily.
Although, which I want to unpack that. Continue, okay. And then we'll get back to whether it was
I think
surprise
for me, the big
not.
Surprise was the timing of when it was announced. That felt strange to me. It felt like a kind of deliberate pivot away from it. It seemed timed to to distract people from the outcome of the debate, which is not a thing that you would do if you felt like you won the debate. That's how that read to me.
Okay, so let's unpack. Should we unpack that?
Sure.
The timing thing. So this happened Tuesday, September 10th. Trump and Kamala have a televised debate. Pundits say Kamala wins. Polls say something similar, I think. And then as they're walking off stage, boom, Taylor Swift Instagram post, me and my cat, Benjamin Button? His cat's name?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I miss Meredith. Meredith Grey, much better name for a cat than Benjamin Button, in my opinion. Whatever. Protect all cats.
Protect all cats. Protect Mudang. Like, just protect everything.
We love animals on podcasts. Taylor says, I watched the debate in her post and I felt XYZ ways. Register to vote. Vote Harris Walz for president. But you know it's coordinated because, boom, there's the Kamala campaign selling friendship bracelets, saying, are you ready for it? In the caption. And you're right. I think you set something like that up days, if not weeks in advance, which to me says it was going to happen no matter what occurred in the debate.
But I guess my question, and obviously we'll leave this to our friends on the third floor primarily, but if you believe that that's an inherent news, but like a positive bump for you, that you did great, wouldn't you save the bump of a Taylor Swift endorsement for another day to give an extra cycle? Instead, I felt like they collapsed into one and maybe distracted away from the potential successes in that debate.
So that leads me to a much larger question, which is,
does anyone care?
Do celebrity endorsements hurt or do they help? Does a celebrity endorsement on the scale of, say, Bryce Hall or Addison Rae mean something different than an endorsement from arguably the most famous person on the planet?
By the way, that who was about Bryce Hall. Never Addison Rae.
But I think we've gone back and forth over the years about the utility of these things. When I say we, I don't mean you and I, but I mean culture in general. Do we want to hear from musicians on this? And then there's the sort of counterweight, which is like what we felt, I think, pointed in Taylor Swift's direction before her endorsement, which was like, You must say something like, the stakes are so high, how dare you not, which is a repeat of what we saw with her in 2020 and 2018 and 2016, namely, which I think this all traces back to. And then the way she responded to that, both in public, in interviews, in her documentary on Netflix, etc. So I don't know, like, where do you want to hear from musicians on this stuff? You don't want to hear from musicians? You think it moves the needle one way or the other?
The thing that I try to remember about the electorate writ large is that there are always new people cycling into the electorate. Like I'm middle-aged. You, a beautiful...
Approaching middle-aged?
A beautiful baby. The only podcast with a middle-aged person and a beautiful baby.
Thanks.
There are always people cycling into the electorate. And it is unpredictable what will reach them and what will move them. I think the type of voters that we would like to be or we know are very informed, but not every voter is informed at the same level. And so I think as an effort to reach potential voters where they're at, something like that is useful. And candidly, something like Kodak Black endorsing Trump is also useful. Although you saw yesterday, I think Kodak was on stage saying vote for Trump, but also do not, like, I've seen no evidence of what he's saying about Haitians in Springfield.
That's an interesting divide there. Yes. Where Kodak Black, Haitian American rapper, has to draw a line between the candidate he's been very vocal about supporting since Trump granted him clemency at the end of his previous administration, and then, yes, end up for his heritage and the sort of fake news stories circulating about Haitian migrants. So, yes, never expected to be talking about that.
These are not sentences we ever thought we would have to say or talk about, but this is the condition of modern politicking. And so to your question about, does it move the needle? I don't know if it moves the needle in this building or in this city, but I think it might move the needle in small ways with people who are just arriving to the electorate in one way or another.
And specifically in terms of visibility, where you're saying my favorite artist standing next to a candidate, I'm going to give that a second thought. If I'm newly of voting age and my heroes, the people I look to the most are anywhere between a TikToker and a pop star.
Yeah, artists become surrogates for candidates. And we tend to think surrogates in the 80s or 90s as being more political figures or more centrist cultural figures. But I think one of the things that's been particularly interesting, and this is true, I think, more of the Trump campaign than of the Harris campaign, is the chaos of who the Trump campaign is engaging with, both in terms of endorsements, speaking at rallies, what podcasts he's doing, podcasts, not doing interviews with most major media, but is doing interviews with Theo Vaughn. There is a much wider net that's being cast, I think, through the Trump lens than through Kamala Harris's campaign, which is going much more down the centrist route. Taylor Swift obviously endorsing, Beyonce song being a theme song of the campaign. That feels Obama era. That feels Clinton era. Whereas the Trump campaign feels like it's looking at the modern internet and saying, this is messy. Let's just spray everywhere and see what happens.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for the New York Times. I grew up in Texas on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
I do think the transition with which Trump has become the aspiring youth culture candidate. I think this was happening, as I said, especially when it seemed like he was going to be facing Joe Biden in the election. But even as the Kamala thing has crested meme-wise very early on in her candidacy, the brat thing happened. We had the brat moment.
That feels 9 months ago.
In which Kamala Harris is brat, says Charlie XCX, as part of her very long-running, very effective marketing campaign of the last 6 months.
Meme of the year.
If you say so. And that was one...
Meme of the year mainstream version.
Meme of the year merch output version.
Fine. Yeah, totally fine. Yeah.
But I think like that was a little burst of onlineness, but the sort of monoculture zeitgeist of Taylor Swift and Beyonce, as you're saying, a bit old school, Trump playing to TikTokers, playing to podcasters and
streamers
and street rappers. I mentioned
made a list.
Yeah, I mentioned the Chef G Sleepy Hollow thing at a rally in the Bronx, and that was the first of many. I can't believe the first time I'm going to say the words OT7 Kwani.
Oh yeah.
Are in the context of him endorsing Trump at a rally in Philadelphia, where he's from.
I could say the same sentence with I Swear Vezo. Actually, legitimately a rapper, I think, is great at a rally in Detroit.
And this has been a very, I would say, surprising strategy on behalf of the Trump campaign, in that we've long associated him with Kid Rock, Billy Ray Cyrus, sort of...
Jason Aldean,
washed up musicians, past their prime, very much in the demo, right? Okay, old conservatives, we know these guys. We saw Kid Rock shoot a Bud Light can. Like, it's not surprising that he's going to show up at the RNC. The Hulk Hogan type figure. And
he thanks you for that,
and that all makes a lot of sense. But to see Trump, as he's pushing up his numbers with Black and Latino voters, really double down on that. And then, but then to say Waka Flocka Flame, another person who's appeared with Trump, like that adds up to me. That makes more sense. That's somebody who's long past their peak, says a lot of stuff, both to be incendiary and get attention. I'm not saying he does or doesn't believe.
Yeah, we can only speculate about anybody's actual beliefs.
Yeah, we can only speculate. But I'm like, all that adds up. Like the fact that they are reaching people who are more or less unknown except among people who really love them. These are not household names. And to me, that's a surprisingly savvy strategy that the campaign has been running. But
do you think it's intentionally savvy, or do you think it's stumbled onto savvy? Because again, I feel like us being into the into that music, but also terminally online in the worst way. To me, I see those as avatars of specific subcultures, right? And we think of classic, like you were talking about Kid Rock and Aldine and whatever. To me, country is obviously the biggest genre or one of the two biggest genres in popular music, but it's often thought of as sort of like quasi-subcultural in mainstream America. To me, Trump is playing a kind of collect them all of American subcultures. It's just that American subcultures are not as racially specific as they used to be. They're spread out. They're online more than they are in physical spaces. And so him being able to say, yes, I can sit with Aiden Ross and then also get endorsed by Nicki Jam, although didn't realize Nicki Jam was not a woman. Whereas, again, the Harris campaign is someone in there is still, there's a monoculture out there. And actually, the sales pitch of the Harris campaign is, what if we got back to the monoculture?
Which is why I do think that the Trump embrace of underground rappers can be seen as a part of a larger strategy, which is essentially being countercultural. He wants to frame himself as the outlaw, as the countercultural candidate, as the punk who's going to come in and disrupt all of this. And I think if you look at it with a wide lens, you could see an Icewear Vezo and an Aiden Ross, the streamer, as similarly
cultural cousins,
underground things that are at once extremely popular and also not obvious household names. Now, is that coming from a cynical place on behalf of these artists and streamers? Because I do think something that I've often feel is discounted in the way that cultural figures either do or don't attach themselves to politics and current events is all these people thrive on an attention economy, Trump included. And where the clicks are, where the attention is, where the headlines are often in the most extreme positions. And
even in terms of how the internet has shifted what we think of as aggregating maximum attention.
I think if you ask Theo Von or Theo Von's podcast producer, who's going to do bigger numbers on an interview? Is it Trump or is it Kamala Harris?
It'd be Trump.
And I think if...
Although we should say Theo Von also interviewed Bernie Sanders the week before the Trump interview.
And I'm not saying that it's done purely with metrics in mind, but I think the push of attention for these people who, as we said, are not these billionaire, zeitgeist-defining, down-the-middle mainstream celebrities, this is bringing them to a new audience, appearing at rallies like this or hosting Trump or Trump affiliates on their podcast. I do think there is an economic, perhaps, motivation.
I think that's fair. You talk about this as an aggregate of countercultural movements, subcultures, whatever. There is an other read of it, which is that it's an alternative mainstream.
Sure.
And the people who participate in it don't experience themselves as subcultural in any meaningful way. What they think is they are the authority figures. If you're working in the Rogan, Aiden Ross, Theo Von, if that's your media diet and you also are online and listen to rap music, this may not seem like a blow against the mainstream. This may just be like, this is the new normal. And I think one of the things that's going to be interesting for us as observers of this over the next 5 to 10 years is, are the people we're talking about in this grouping going to be the true centrist options for culture 10 years from now? Are they going to continue to grow and gain acolytes and actually become true centrists 10 years from now? Whereas now, to us, maybe they feel slightly fringe or like mass cult on a political margin. But maybe that's actually just the beginning of something where Theo Von is the next Oprah.
Scary thought. I do think it's interesting that when you look at somebody like...
Who is, by the way, Oprah interviewing or doing an event with Kamala this week. You couldn't have a more stark contrast than Theo Von interviewing Trump for actually the rare revealing conversation with Donald Trump, which doesn't happen, generally speaking. And Kamala doing an event with Oprah, very old form of vulnerability.
Very monoculture, yes, as we refer to. But I do think specifically coming back to the idea of musicians and their endorsement and their endorsement carrying a lot of weight, I find that it's often framed in moral terms. It's like Taylor Swift, you've grossed $1 billion on Eras Tour. You've put out however many albums about your problems and your love life, and you owe it to the world, to your audience, to speak up about the risks that Donald Trump poses to democracy. We saw this with the blowback she got in 2016 for not really speaking up, and Hillary loses and everything that happened. There were people calling Taylor Swift a Nazi, basically, ironically, in this case with what happened in the intervening years. But now I feel like there is this pressure for stars, especially at a certain level, to speak up, and it is framed as a duty. On the flip side, you have someone like Pharrell who came out in a recent interview saying, like, I know these people, like, I don't want to hear from them on this issue. Leave me out of it. I've got nothing to say about this. Although I'll do my thing, but it's none of your business. Like, do you feel that the modern audience expects that of these stars now? Or are they being steered wrong by a loud majority in their comment section or on Twitter or on social media?
Yeah, I don't know if it's expectation. I think it's actually maybe something a little bit more troubling, which is like the gamification, the memification of the political system in our country, and the lowered wall between someone who feels the authority to speak on a subject because of being very informed on that subject and someone who feels the authority to speak on a subject simply because they have a microphone.
You mean a reality television contestant running for and winning the presidency?
And so because of that, I think that one of the recurring jokes on Twitter is always like, we shouldn't know how this many people think about anything at any given time. And I think that that is triply or quadruply true for politics. And I also think that what you have is vastly more people finding it expedient, whether for views or for discourse or for Twitter fights, to talk about things that maybe they are not totally informed about, but drive attention. And so I think that, to me, that's why French Montana is sitting with Lara Trump. I don't think it's because French Montana's fans are like, we demand that you take a stand. That's not happening. I think it's because he's, wouldn't it be something if I, Lil Pump, why is Lil Pump a full-time shill for Donald Trump now? Lil Pump is a full-time shill because it drives attention. How is what he's doing now aesthetically that different than what he was doing in 2017, 2018? The subject matter is different, but the kind of like high-grade trolling is pretty much the same.
I do think there's probably a difference to be drawn. There's a line between French Montana and Taylor Swift. And I do think the way...
No.
The way that the Taylor endorsement is its own news cycle, yeah, is...
You mean the French Montana endorsement? Didn't get a full news cycle?
It's very coordinated with the campaign directly, seemingly. They keep referencing her lyrics in speeches and in statements, et cetera. I think there's only a few artists that are probably considered in that camp, the we're going to do this officially way. And I do think it's possible we haven't seen the last of Taylor Swift in this election.
No, or Beyonce, for that matter.
Or Beyonce, which, yeah, I think is a card they still may play. There was rumors that it was going to be at the DNC. It wasn't. There was some anticlimax
but
there.
But also another example of a celebrity narrative overwhelming a political narrative. Because if you think about the coverage of the DNC on that last day, theoretically, the bulk of the coverage should be about Kamala Harris's speech, what she said, how did it perform, what did people think about it, and literally a third or a half the coverage was about, is Beyonce here? Is Beyonce come? TMZ had to issue an apology
right,
for getting it wrong.
Right. I will say, in TMZ's defense, people like to remember when they're wrong.
Of course, and
say that makes them an untrustworthy source, period.
To me, it's the opposite.
I think the fact that they had to apologize for it is actually proof that
that they're legit.
More often than not, they're correct.
I have no quarrel with TMZ. I'm just saying that's how loud the chatter was and how active the conversation was.
Also, the algorithms are running our lives. And I think that you may have seen more coverage of Beyonce. Is she there or is she not there?
Did.
No, versus somebody who doesn't engage.
Oh, I thought you were trying to drag me.
In the ways that we do with popular culture. I'm just saying, I don't think there was any shortage of coverage of Kamala's speech because of the Beyonce question, depending on where you get your news and how.
Fair, but there was a tremendous amount of discourse that day. That was a distraction. And in my mind, the rollout of the Taylor endorsement was also a distraction.
The other thing I think you can say about the Taylor Swift endorsement is that it continues to create news cycles because it actually lands with the opponent. So over the weekend, you had Donald Trump on Truth Social say plainly, one of his most unadorned tweets or
purest tweets
posts.
I mean, I can only presume.
In a very long time, just, I hate Taylor Swift! Exclamation point.
Yes, I believe so.
And that's somebody that was predated by him sharing his own fake Taylor Swift endorsement or saying yeah. Swifties for Trump with some real photos and some artificial intelligence.
Sure.
Fake images.
Mm-hmm.
He's spoken about her before. He's called her very beautiful over and over again.
They also made Eras Tour merch.
They made the Donald Trump has his own Eras Tour logo. So this is, we know this is somebody who values fame.
Absolutely. Donald Trump Eras Tour merch, that's like a pizza slime thing. Like it's so
responsive.
Internet responsive, immediate meme. It's how the entire internet functions right now. But paradoxically, the Harris campaign still seems a little bit slow and tentative sometimes about this kind of stuff. But the Trump campaign basically leans in.
Though they did embrace the brat stuff very quickly. It became a centerpiece
That first 2 weeks of the Harris campaign was like very meme forward. I think they've pulled back on it a little bit.
With Taylor Swift.
Well, sure.
But I wonder if you can rank the weight of these musician endorsements by the response you get from the other side. Would be really interesting if Kamala was like tweeting, like, I swear Vezo lyrics.
Yeah.
To be like, why am I not getting the Detroit rap vote?
Or suggesting she only likes early Kodak Black and not late Kodak Black. You wanted to talk a little bit about reggaeton. Obviously, so there's been an interesting attention on Trump from Black voters and Latin voters and hip hop artists and reggaeton artists coming out in favor and speaking at rallies or being invited to speak at rallies. This thing happened with Nicki Jam recently, who Trump mistook for a woman because Trump clearly has never met this person.
Right. Someone told Trump Nicki Jam is going to come out at the rally.
And Trump said,
literally,
very beautiful.
She's hot. Nicki Jam, she's hot. Nicki Jam, not a woman.
But then there was blowback that there was a Nicki Jam collaboration with Maná. It's a Mexican rock band. And they took their collaboration with Nicki Jam off of streaming services as a counter protest to what Nicki had done endorsement-wise. But it is interesting to see, again, Trump aggregating and trying to pick off pieces of various communities and say, I have infiltrated, I have found my way into there. And one thing that you were talking about is the difference between 2024 and 2016, for example, or even the Obama era. A lot of people, I think, are speaking up on the Trump side this time. Not everybody is older, but there are a lot of people who maybe in 2016 weren't of voting age. Maybe they were in high school. Maybe they were before high school. Generationally, they may not be burdened by the experience that others of their peers might have been by going through the first Trump administration thinking about politics. That may be something that didn't register exactly for them. And so it's not as simple. It could just be that the Trump campaign is proactively seeking people out and saying, hey, will you stand with us? Will you stand with us? But they might also be targeting people who are essentially novices and new to politics. Whereas Kamala Harris is saying, hey, if you've been paying attention, what we want is for you to come on our side because you've seen what the last X amount of years have done.
I do see it slightly differently, where I find that the way people have spoken in pop culture and in music specifically about Trump in the lead up to the 2024 election speaks to me to the sort of, this is a frequently used word with regards to Trump, but the normalization of Donald Trump. I think if you think back to 2016, there was a lot of pressure for celebrities to be anti-Trump, and it was totally off limits. You were completely casting yourself into the wilderness by coming out as pro-Trump. This was FDT by YG era, Nipsey Hussle, there's songs, you know, there was the protests. Like, it's almost hard to summon back to remember what that energy was like. He was a bad word in entertainment circles, and you risked your career basically to come out in favor of him. And I think we've seen that fade slowly over time. I think 2020, there was some of that still, but it did not have the same fever pitch that it did in 2016. And then as we got closer through the Biden administration, you have people, even people who spoke out strongly against Trump, even someone like YG saying, maybe I was too.
Did he say that?
He didn't say, I'm paraphrasing, okay. But he was just basically, things aren't better for us. Like those sorts of ideas. You have someone like Snoop Dogg, who was a big anti-Trump person early on. Then Trump grants clemency to one of the founders of Death Row at the end of his first administration, along with Lil Wayne and Kodak Black. Wayne, another person, been photographed repeatedly with Trump. They have seemingly something of a personal relationship. Trump got rid of one of his gun cases. And I just think, like, it went from being something that you had celebrities like whispering naughtily, oh, like, I kind of like Trump, to saying it with their chest. And I do think that that's sort of it's representative. It's a microcosm of what has happened among normal people and culturally. And I think that especially when we had Trump leading in the polls against Biden, like, I think it was, usually I don't think celebrities and what they think is representative of the broader electorate. But in this case, I think you did see, there was more permission granted broadly to be open about your not only Republican leanings, but pro-Trump leanings.
How much of this is organic and how much of this is orchestrated? And one thing that's come up that I've seen in the last week is on Trump's TikToks or Reels, like, he's using audio from Eat and NetSpend, which is bizarre to me. Who's in charge of that? Who's making that decision to use that music because of either how that music travels on TikTok organically, and then when you click on the sound at the bottom, you're going to end up with Trump videos or Trump-related videos. How much of it is that? How much of it is it a goof? Is it just someone on Trump's social team who's just a super Rage 3.0 head?
And I have no oversight. Let me just pick the music I like.
With whatever.
Yeah,
is it that? And how much of it is, again, as we've been talking about, more orchestrated, more pointed? What do you think?
I think it goes back to the attention economy and, like, how are we going to get eyeballs on this? And I think if you can do something a little bit subversive, that's going to bring more eyes. It's going to bring more likes. It's going to we even see it, I think, with all the artists telling Trump not to play their music at rallies.
Yes.
Like, that too is a news cycle. If all headlines are good headlines, and I think that has largely been something you could attribute to Donald Trump and his universe and his campaign, then I think any sort of spike of interest is seen as a positive. And I think that especially when they've seen, oh, like, this little corner of the internet seems to like it when we play these games, see it in the AI images that Elon Musk tweets or yes. Donald Trump tweets. Like, yeah. there is this very online contingent of the right. And they've taken that from the left, which Kamala said, all right, we're going to play that game a little bit, but we're going to go Oprah. We're going to go Taylor Swift. We're going to go Beyonce. You guys have fun playing in the mud. There's a joke among a lot of the Democratic blogger types that's like, whichever campaign is more online is going to lose.
Interesting.
And I think that's something that you saw from Hillary when they felt like the Hillary Clinton campaign was engaging too much in what people on Twitter or now X were saying. And now I think you could say that that's what the Trump-Vance campaign is doing more than the Harris-Walz campaign. I think in terms of this stuff being orchestrated behind the scenes, there is something to say about that as well. Rolling Stone reported that Billy McFarland of Fyre Festival fame had a hand in getting some of these rappers in touch with the Trump campaign. I have heard myself from many sources that there have been conversations between pro-Trump PACs, some run by Lara Trump, who, as you said, is pictured with French Montana, and touring agents for rappers. And there have been offers made for appearance fees and that sort of thing. I think there's more to come out about that. But I think this isn't purely ideological, moral, political standing decision making. This is also business. Politics is big business.
And just take that back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, where more people feel able, empowered is maybe not the right word, but able to speak up on this. I'm old enough to remember when rappers didn't actually have loads of opportunity to monetize their celebrity. You weren't getting ad campaigns. You weren't getting licensing deals. In a lot of cases in the 80s and into the 90s, you couldn't even really tour at a high level because the insurance was too high and there was this presumption that people were not going to show up for hip hop, or and people were concerned about security allegedly and so on and so forth. We're in a very different moment. I know this is an imperfect comparison, but I can't help but think of the Playboi Carti Aiden Ross situation, where Aiden Ross gives Playboi Carti $1 million in exchange for showing up to stream, and then Carti ghosts him and doesn't show up. It's an unfortunate example for the nature of contemporary journalism, but it's also telling that there's money everywhere. And I think if you are in the business of getting bags, is there a material difference between X amount of dollars to show up at a Trump event and X amount of dollars to show up at the opening of a nightclub and X amount of dollars to show up at someone's birthday party and so on and so forth? Maybe those lines are blurrier, not simply ideologically, but they are not viewed as political choices as much as they are financial choices. That I wonder about. Okay, enough of all that. It's going to be what I do know is it's going to be an extraordinarily messy couple of months coming up. I have a feeling we're going to come back to this. I'm sure there's going to be some Kamala concert with big names.
Taylor, Pennsylvania rally?
Could happen. Taylor, Beyonce performing together somewhere.
Wow. Never happened, right?
I don't think it's ever happened. Like, I would not be surprised if something along those lines happened. As for Trump, a little
Rolling pump, Loud?
A little, yeah.
It's headlining Rolling Loud?
Oh, I'm just going to let that sit in the air. Before we go, it is snack time. Why don't you grab those bags? I bought these on the Upper East Side. What's like fancy place on like Madison, like 84th or whatever?
It's not my hood.
Whatever. I bought them there. They were by the cash register. And I thought
it was
like,
an impulse buy.
It was an impulse buy, but it was an impulse buy for, it's for content.
How would you say this brand?
I can't actually read the name. What is
I-S-S-E-I.
it? Issei.
Sure. Issei.
Yeah, yeah. Issei no Miyake. Issei no Miyake.
Yeah. These are Issei mochi gummies.
Two things I enjoy.
Mochi.
Sure.
Yeah. And gummies. Yeah. These are plant-based.
Oh, that's why I bought them. I'd forgotten because I gave you the bag, but I didn't look at it. Yes, plant-based mochi gummies. Yeah.
So we have a mango flavor and a strawberry flavor. One thing about me, I don't know if I've ever said this in the snack segment on this show.
Uh-oh.
I hate strawberry flavored things. My what? Least favorite
really?
Artificial flavor.
Oh, it's like I'm like a child. It's like my favorite artificial
All right, so
flavor.
So I'll start with the strawberry and you start with the mango right, and then we'll reverse.
Also, I'm trying to eat more mango. Not that this is eating mango, but I'm trying to eat more dried mango as a snack in the house.
It is the most candy-like fruit.
And so I feel like if I can have it in the home and not have a cookie in the middle of the day, but instead have some dried mango, then I'm achieving something.
What about wet mango?
Yeah, that's
Go
I've heard.
Go dip it in the ocean.
I've
like
heard
Rihanna.
That.
Yeah. These say they're inspired by the treasured ancient Japanese tradition of mochi treats. A truly delightful snack. We'll be the judge of that.
I'm always saying, yeah.
I like, so they're,
also the rip was very satisfying.
Yeah, yeah, great packaging.
It was like papery plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It had the tear of paper, but the smoothness of plastic.
A minority owned and woman owned company, the bag tells.
American or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that they're a little, they have like,
different shapes.
They're little pillows.
They are little pills, but they're like a little, they seem to slightly vary in size. They're not uniform.
They're not completely uniform because they're indie. You know, these are like, this is a bespoke, this is a DIY. Fancy can. It's a fancy DIY. Candy. None of this mass produced garbage. There's literally
someone in the factory like chopping it.
Yeah. But they're also, they have like a like flowery coating mm-hmm. to keep them from sticking together. It's a nice touch. A harder chew than I imagined.
Oh, I don't think so. Also, this is kind of like low-key a crazy thing to put on your packaging. Naturally flavored with other natural flavors.
Nice. I like this. Even the strawberry. Pretty good.
All right, let's switch.
I taste the mochi.
I do taste the mochi. To me, the mango flavor is not that strong.
It's pretty subtle.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
It feels mature. It also feels a little bit... It feels like a modern grandma would have this in the candy dish instead of Werther's.
Yeah. This is grown-ass candy. Yes. This is very mature. Yes. This is mature candy.
This is 84th and Madison candy.
Yeah, whereas the gummies that I eat, I'm like, these are for children mm-hmm. and these are for adults.
Also, the flavor is subtle on the strawberry. Mm-hmm.
That's why I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
I would like buy these for my mother, but not for myself.
To me, I agree. It's like totally successful in a category that doesn't do a lot for me. But maybe I would be better served by having these in my home than by having what I usually have.
See, but I also think it could be a bait and switch where it's you feel like you're not eating candy and you're eating like quote unquote healthy candy, but really you're still eating candy.
Only 160 calories for the whole pouch though.
Okay.
I'm going to say...
It's a lot of sugar. Still a lot of sugar.
I'm going to say for me, the strawberry is a... Strawberries, I'm going to call it a soft 8.
A soft 8?
It's a soft 8 and the mango is a 7.
Okay. I was going to say like a 6 out of 10 for the strawberry and like a 7 out of 10 for the mango. I like the texture a lot. I'm just like...
Want it to be grosser.
I want it to be grosser.
Yeah.
It's too tasteful.
Yeah, I get it. That's our show. That's the snack segment. We're going to go out with FOT, Icewear Vezza. If we start with Taylor, I guess you got to close with Icewear Vezza.
That's what I always say.
Yeah. So let's listen to Vezza's record with Lil Baby. Know the difference.
Trust new friend, I'm telling my plans, I'm showing my hand. Fuck, I look life when I hold my bands. I turn to myself, I turn to my man. Yeah, really been through hell and back. Hit the road, double back to bless the fam. Crazy got their hands out, but never lent the helping hand. Always been the same, really living, never had to flex for fans. As my hood, the only flexing that I ever really did.